Former Miami Beach Mayor Philip Levine earned international acclaim for attacking rising sea levels, chronic crime, and intolerance. Now, this business leader and cruise industry phenom has a message for both sides of the political aisle. Go big for America. From Ballard Studios, it's 13th and Park.
The future doesn't belong to the faint hearted.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
We will make America strong again. We will get through this together.
I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
Well, Philip, welcome to the show, and I can't help myself to quote my favorite entertainment icon from Miami Beach, Jackie Gleason, and away we go. Justin?
I love it. And I agree with you. By the way, did he not make Miami Beach? I mean, with that show, I mean, he came to Miami Beach and he brought with him the entire cast and crew. And I think it put Miami Beach on the map from a media point of view.
There's no question that America came to know Miami Beach through Jackie Gleason, probably in all the right ways, don't you think?
Absolutely. It was the fun and sun capital of the world.
You have done a lot of public speaking, writing, appearances on television. You've written op-ed articles. You've been critical of both Republicans and Democrats. You're still, I believe, a registered Democrat. I think you've referred to yourself as a radical moderate or radical centrist. And what Adam and I have been talking about is the independent voters, no party affiliation voters, seem to be a growing part of our electorate. How would you describe your political philosophy today? How would you describe the two parties, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party?
I think both parties, Justin, as we've talked about, are so incredibly challenged. And yeah, I call myself a radical centrist. I think two greatest compliments I ever got when I was mayor and running for governor is, number one, they said, you know, you're Bloomberg of the South. And I said, well, just can I have more zeros at the end of my name? And I would like that even more. And the second thing is, a lot of my Republican friends would say to me, as they go, my God, you are a Republican in Democrats' clothing. And I said, well, what's wrong with that? Why can't I be both? Why can't I share from one side and share from the other? What is it? One side's right, one side's wrong? That's not the case. And I got to be honest with you. I think No Labels has it right when they say we're not right, not left, but forward. Pro-people, pro-business. I believe that was kind of how Clintonian politics got started, as the Democrats were out in the desert for so many years with Mondale and McGovern and Dukakis. And then they smartened up and they said, boy, that's amazing. That redneck from Arkansas, I think he actually can be president. Just seemed to attract both sides. So I think I am the best of both. And I think a lot of Americans are feeling that way. You hear it, you see it, you smell it, you talk to your friends. They're sick of it. They want a path forward.
So, you know, there's been a lot of press and media recently, Philip, about the movement of people from blue states to red states. Now, to get back to the tribalism of it all, right? What's underneath that? What's driving that? And do you think that's something that will actually lead to a movement with long-term consequence?
Adam, I would love to believe, for the sake of my value of my apartment in New York City, that that was a short term and it's going to change over. But the reality is we're seeing an influx of people from all across the country coming to Florida. Californians, New Yorkers. I mean, look what's going on. I mean, my God, think about this. You have the de Blasio years in New York City. And as I always said, he's the greatest thing that ever happened to Florida. And we should have pushed for him to have a third term. Okay. And we put all our marketing money and give it to Bill de Blasio and give the guy a third term. Because what he did for Florida, he should get some kind of medal from our state. I look at California and I said, who in their right mind would ever want to be in California? I mean, it's fun to go and hang out and enjoy the beach in Santa Monica and love it. But like, who would want to start a company there? I think California and France are probably on par together on where's the worst place to actually build a business these days. So this trend is so ingrained. It was absolutely, I would say, turbocharged during the pandemic. Florida was the beneficiary of that. Texas was a beneficiary. Tennessee is a beneficiary. But how does that turn around so fast? You'd have to do a radical lobotomy on the political scene in New York, California, and Illinois. And I'm not so sure I see that happening.
Raises an interesting question because it was supercharged, as you said, during the pandemic. And there's been a migration out of many of those blue states into those red states. And I wonder whether the red states are becoming redder and then the blue states are becoming bluer because the people who left are migrating to places where they feel more comfortable politically. And that leads to my question to you. Do you think that Florida is now irreversibly red because of what happened during the pandemic and all these people fleeing to Florida? Or do you ever see it going blue for either a gubernatorial or a Democratic presidential campaign?
Justin, I see it potentially becoming more of a dark blue, borderline purple. I think if the right candidates step up and they say, listen, we understand the cultural issues. We understand that we want to have pro-police safe communities. We understand we want to keep taxes low. We want to understand that parents want more control in their schools and they deserve to have more control. We understand that we need safe and secure borders. If a Democrat steps up and is able to project that image, but at the same time, projects an image of compassionate capitalism, so to speak, or an image of warmth and personality and charisma and saying, let's bring our state together, but at the same time, not compromising the reasons why y'all came here, right? I think that kind of individual can win in the state of Florida. But unfortunately, we haven't seen it. And due to the primary system, it's very difficult for that type of person to rise for the general electorate to even have a chance of voting for him.
The platform you just mentioned, I think it would be hard for a Democrat to win in a Democratic primary with that platform. Do you think Florida should be an open primary state?
Well, I agree. It should be an open primary state, 1,000%. It should have been a while back. I can only look at our election when I ran for governor. If we'd had the opportunity and the folks had an opportunity to maybe even rank the Democratic candidates, I believe we would have had a more centrist candidate. People were looking for something different, but we didn't give it to them. It's like going to a restaurant and they tell you very simple, you could have fish or fish. And you're like, well, I don't really like fish. You know, you have chicken, you have steak. No, fish or fish. Okay. That's what this primary system's about. And we're serving people something they don't want.
Well, I'll tell you right now, I want fish. So you sold me. I want that for lunch today. Hey, Philip, you know, one of the things you put your finger on, which I think has challenged Democrats, frankly, in terms of the conversation, not just in Florida, but across America, is law and order. And what we saw recently in Chicago in the mayoral campaign where the incumbent Lori Lightfoot didn't even make it through the primary, there was a runoff basically squaring off a progressive against a law and order centrist. And of course, we know how that turned out. This cue, this clip, Fabian, and then I want to get your reaction to that and an explanation about why.
We have a new mayor in Chicago, and his name is Brandon Johnson, a staunch progressive. You may have heard about the crisis of gun violence in Chicago, and Johnson managed to defeat a tough on crime moderate, Paul Vallas. So what happened here? Well, Johnson was backed by some of the biggest national political leaders, including Senator Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, who came to Chicago and held a huge rally for Johnson to get out the vote. But it was the city unions that delivered Johnson's win on Tuesday.
Did fighting crime lose out to ideology in Chicago?
I think the unions, and I think that particular researcher reporter said it the way it is. And I think it had to do with how the campaigns were run. The reality is that I think that the on-the-grounds grassroots campaigning that Johnson was able to accomplish with those progressive folks helping and those organizations in conjunction with the unions narrowly overcame what probably a lot of people were thinking is safety first. And that's what happened. And I think that's a lesson for all of us. You know, what do they say? The way you win an election is three M's: money, message, messenger. But I believe money is becoming less and less important right now. And those grassroots organizations via the internet and social media were able to overcome even that message of safety.
If you have a message and a messenger that suddenly are hot, the money comes. So the idea of having big money early as almost a prerequisite for being considered a serious, potentially serious candidate has given way to a new world where the small donors, and this is something that actually my colleague and co-host Justin Safey has talked about at length and written about, the whole idea of the long tail, where you have more and more people in America that are now funding things they believe in, as opposed to you line up the 100 richest people in town and say, you've got to max out.
I agree with you. And by the way, Justin, you've been a pioneer. You've been saying this for years. I remember.
I mentioned it in 2016 after Trump won. I mean, that was the best example. And it goes back to Barack Obama beating Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primary in 2008. Without the internet and small donors, he wouldn't have been able to have the resources to beat her.
100% true. Listen, it's like the Beatles song, money can't buy you love. That's becoming more and more true, I think.
I saw a poll that NBC News just put out, and it said that only 5% of Americans want to see a Joe Biden, Donald Trump rematch. And it raises the question, I have this conversation so often, why aren't there more candidates that seem to be eligible or likable for the highest office in the land of president?
Well, I think it goes back to that famous television show. I think it was on NBC called Survivor. I don't think everybody wants to be on Survivor. It's almost like when you decide to run for office, you know what it's like. You stand up in their community with your spear and you go, I want to be the leader. And the whole community goes, leader, leader, leader. And they go, well, let's put the leader through the test. And the next thing you know, you're going to go through the survivor test. And if you were able to survive, then maybe you shall have the opportunity to be the leader. But it's so grueling. It's so tough. It's so debilitating that I think so many people shy away from it. But I think I got to tell you, I said this for a while, RFK Jr., well, we think he's credible, he's uncredible, he's crazy, he's not crazy. The fact of the matter is he has a brand and brands sell. And the fact that he's entered the Democratic race, to me, has opened a little hole in the boat where water is starting to come in. He will gain some traction. I'm not saying he gets the nomination, like same way his uncle didn't get the nomination in 1980 against Jimmy Carter. But what he's going to do, he's opening the floodgates for potentially other Democrats to wake up in the morning, look in the mirror and say, RFK Jr. can do it. Why not me? And I think we're going to see more people jump into the race because he's opened up the floodgates going forward. But with that said, I think it also opens the floodgate for a third party, which I strongly believe is going to happen. But we're going to have the opportunity for Plan B in America if it is Biden versus Trump.
Independent registrations in America are at record highs. There are projections within just the state of Florida that independents may overtake Republicans as the lead party in registration within the next 5 to 10 years. So obviously, Philip, there's a thirst for this. There's an undiminished drive to have an alternative that people are looking for, but they don't have it. They have A or B. How long do you think we're going to have to wait?
I think it's going to happen next year, but I think it's only going to happen if in the event we have Trump versus Biden. America may want a Plan B. America and the center, who President Nixon called, you know, the great silent majority that's sitting there in the middle that has that crazy thing they do every day called work, where they're not actually able to go out and express their opinions constantly. They're going to be looking for a Plan B because all the numbers are showing right now, as you just said, people are not happy with Biden versus Trump. Why not offer the right product for the right time? And I believe now is that time. And I think that will happen next year.
Been out of office for a few years now. You've continued to weigh in on different issues. You ran for governor. Do you miss being in public service? And do you think there's public service in your future?
Justin, I got to tell you, I think the best people we could ever have in public service are people that don't have public service in their background. Right? I think people that come from that crazy thing, the private sector, a job, going into public service for all the right reasons. That's why I did it. And that burning thought of helping and being involved and feeling a passion for making change for the positive is always going to be inside me. That's why I write those op-eds. And I always say that you can't plan. You don't want to like say, I have to run for office. I have to run for office. Those are the kind of people we have out there. We need less of them. We need people like our founding fathers that didn't wake up one day and say, you know what? I just need to go sign a Declaration of Independence. Where is that declaration? No, they were lawyers, they were doctors, they were farmers, they were business people. The opportunity was thrust upon them and they felt it in their heart and soul to help form this new nation. We need more people like that, that come from outside the political world, that do it for the right thing. And by the way, you don't have to keep doing it. You can do it, you don't have to do it, but you just serve to help the greater good. That's why I did it. If the opportunity arose in the future, it was the right thing at the right time, maybe. Right now, I'm building a cruise line. I'm having fun building a family. But that's what we should have in office. People that aren't addicted to this, don't need the ego feed constantly to make them feel important about themselves, that they do it for the right reasons.
Well, you just brought up the cruise industry. I can't help myself. Obviously, I remember reading the story before we even met, about that kid who grew up above the news cafe with a couple hundred bucks in his pocket that led to great success in the cruise industry. And now you're launching a whole new cruise line for Four Seasons. I've seen the clips that all seem very heady. I think the reservations are probably coming out of the woodwork right now at you. Can you tell us about two things? One is how the cruise industry itself has recovered from some very tough days because of COVID, and also the travel industry in particular, because I can tell you personally, I want to travel again.
Adam, I think what we're seeing now, and it's happened pre-pandemic but gets accelerated, is there's always been a movement away from products and based more on experiences that people want. They want experiences. experiences are something that for your soul, for your family, people come together. And we've seen that accelerate dramatically. The cruise industry became the poster child, unfortunately, for the pandemic. Virus spread on board a couple of different ships. It was televised all over the world. The industry was completely shut down. No industry was shut down worse than the cruise industry. And on top of that, because they're not U.S. corporations, they were ineligible to receive any funding through any federal government programs, including PPP, anything else. So they had to take on billions of dollars in debt, not to build new cruise ships, just to survive and pay costs and expenses so that they would potentially see a better day in the future. That better day has come. The bookings are off the hook. People are booking cruises like you can't believe. Why? Phenomenal vacation experience. It's all inclusive. You don't get hit all different charges. It's literally you're checking into a great hotel. The hotel moves every day. You wake up in the morning and you're in a different city and you don't have to pack and unpack and you have dinner at the same place and whatever you want to do. So the value proposition and the experience is as good or better than it was. Rates are going up. Demand is there. People want to explore the world. So we're seeing, yeah, beyond revenge travel, now people are making this more into their lifestyle. And because of technology, like the technology we're on today, people can be anywhere and travel and experience new worlds.
Now, the Four Seasons Cruise Line, you're building brand new ships, I think you said in Italy or somewhere in Europe.
Yes.
When do they come online, and when can Justin and I be assured we get a friends and family discount on
some
tickets?
You're getting that 2% discount, I'm guaranteed, okay? A full retail rate, right? So that's guaranteed. Our first ship comes out in November of 25, then 26, then 27. We've signed for 3 cruise ships. Our ships are super upscale. They're only 95 suites, 33,000 gross tons. The inspiration of the design was on Aristotle Onassis, the famous shipping tycoon's yacht called the Christina O. So they're very unique. They're very different. We don't use the word cruise. We are a yacht on steroids. We think that's the market that people want between yachts and cruise ships. And that's what we focused on. But this has been a dream of mine for years. 14 years ago, I met the amazing founder of Four Seasons by the name of Isidore Sharp in Toronto. They loved the idea, but the timing wasn't right for him. Fast forward. Gentleman lived around the corner from me, great entrepreneur who's building and owning Four Seasons Hotels. His name is Nadeem Ashi. He and I came together on the idea, and here we are.
How would you handicap the 2024 reelection? Assess Joe Biden for us, assess Donald Trump for us, assess Ron DeSantis, and anyone else you think might be a candidate.
Hey, Justin, talk about horse races. I think we're in the first, beginning round of this horse race. I think I just heard or read that no matter what happens to Donald Trump, the charges are not severe enough and he has no prior record, so that man's not going to prison. Every time they go at him with every single type of charge, I think it exalts him to even a higher level of representing everyone who's against the system and everyone who feels disenfranchised and doesn't like what's going on, makes him even stronger and stronger so he can expect more strength. Biden's age is a big challenge for him. I feel like Biden has fallen into the Jimmy Carter trap, and I think it's very hard to get out of it. The end of Jimmy Carter's term, it didn't make a difference. It was going to be morning in America. People were looking for something else. They wanted more leadership. And I feel like somehow that new leadership is going to come from somewhere. Maybe it comes from another Democrat. Maybe it comes from the Republican has another nominee that comes up and beats Trump and DeSantis. Or maybe it comes from a third party, someone who brings us together and really feels like a new morning in America. But whatever it is, the country's looking for, I think, additional new leadership.
I can tell you, Philip, from your service as mayor of Miami Beach, you did some incredibly important things on sea level rise, getting chronic crime under control, on brandishing the irons against intolerance and showing what it means to go big. Yeah, the whole idea of trying to dream again, aspire again, but not in a small way. Let's go for it. And I think that was very compelling when you served as mayor. And it's a compelling message, frankly, for the rest of America that's looking for the very things the three of us are talking about, something they cannot find, but they desperately want.
See you tomorrow.
Mr. Levine, it's raining.
Yeah, I know. Well, come on, Earl.
In some parts of the world, going around the city by boat is pretty cool, like Venice.
But in Miami Beach, when it rains, it floods.
That's got to stop, because I'm just not sure how much more of this Earl and I can take.
Well, Justin, Philip Levine is colorful and quotable. Is he also right?
I think he represents a growing constituency of Floridians, of Americans, who don't feel at home in either party. He's still a registered Democrat. But the question when I asked him about whether Florida is irretrievably red, he said no. He thinks it can be dark blue with a shade of purple.
Right.
And then he outlined he thought the agenda that could win, by which a Democrat could win the state of Florida. And I didn't say it during the interview with him, but yes, that agenda could win the state of Florida. But I don't think that agenda could win a Democratic primary.
That's a problem.
Talking about law enforcement, talking about immigration enforcement, talking about a low taxes. Those issues sound right to most Floridians, but in a Democratic primary, you know, Andrew Gillum, who ran for governor in 2018, actually proposed raising taxes, and he won the Democratic primary with that proposal.
If it's not already obvious, Philip calls it like it is, and that's why he's so engaging and so refreshing at the same time. And the interesting thing, you have to give him a lot of credit for. When someone says something that he believes in, and say it's a Republican, he says that's a good idea, as opposed to finding some talking point to disparage it or diss it, and vice versa. So he's an equal opportunity praiser and critic on both sides of the aisle, trying to get to a message that he fully believes in. And I think if you were to poll Floridians or even Americans, a majority believe in. You can feel that if Philip could create an agenda that mirrors the center, that in Florida would be anti-tax, pro-business, pro-government service, but also pro-education, pro-environment, that is a winning formula.
And I think he also represents, and he kind of mentioned this towards the end of the interview, the fact that I point out that he had never served in elected office before he served as mayor. And I asked him if he's going to run for anything again. And he said, look, we've got too many people in office that have long careers in public service. We need more people like the founders who served and went home, or when the situation called for their service, they rose to it, but they didn't see it as a lifelong occupation or vocation. And I think that we've seen that, just as an example, members of Congress, normally to become a member of Congress, you have to rise through the ranks of elected officials. You might start at a city council, you might become a state legislator, you might become a statewide elected official, then you get to Congress. We've seen more people get into Congress running for the first time ever in the last 20 years. So that's a phenomenon as well. Non-politicians running and winning office.
That's the way the founders wanted it from the very beginning, that these would be citizen legislators and not career politicians. And what Philip really speaks to is the need for experience, qualitative experience from those who represent us. So instead of spending a career in politics, you spend a decade or two in education or in law enforcement or in business. You know, it's a big difference between talking about business, never having run one or signed a paycheck, versus those that have. And I think he feels that if the qualitative level of representation were to increase, that there's a lot of hope that this country would be in better shape and we get a lot of other things done.
Absolutely. I think he's really got his finger on a lot of what's going on in terms of dissatisfaction with both parties and wanting to see more non-politicians running for office.
This was someone who, with $500 in his pocket, he started off, Justin, he was going to be in the financial business, didn't like it, ended up seeing a Help Wanted ad. They used to run Help Wanted ads back then in the paper for someone to lecture on a cruise line. That's how Philip got on his first cruise ship. And from there, he created a bit of a media empire. And then he met, as a member of the Miami Beach community, where a lot of Democrats in particular come through there, he met Bill Clinton. And it was Bill Clinton, frankly, that gave him the desire, the drive to want to seek public life and to do it the right way. And I think that's something that Philip carried with him, not only as mayor for 4 years in Miami Beach, which is not the easiest city to govern. It's a very restive population that expects a lot of government and of themselves, but also what he's done since then and the launch of this new cruise line. I can tell you, I want to be first in line, because anything Philip does in the hospitality area, I guarantee you, is first class.
Well, I was glad that he offered us the 2% friends and family discount. So I'm looking forward to taking him up on that.
We better book our passage now, because I think the tickets are going to be going fast. Well, another great show. This is really one about the power, or the emerging power, of America's center and what that could mean for the future of politics and the future of government. I think you and I both agree that the more Americans feel represented in the process and by those who we elect, the better it is for the country as a whole. Don't miss future episodes by following us on Apple, Spotify, or other podcast platforms, or go to the YouTube channel where you can subscribe for free.